safe. All of them.
Chanda Vega. Of Chanda Vega. Anucharaha. Followers. Paranjana. Of King Paranjana. Puram. City. Yada. When. Hartum. To plunder. Are vire. Began. Tatra. There. Pratyashedat. Defended. Prajagaraha. The big serpent. Translation, when King Gandharva Raj Chandavega and his followers began to plunder the city of Paranjana, a snake with five hoods began to defend the city. You can repeat. When King Gandharva Raj Chandavega and his followers began to plunder the city of Paranjana, a snake with five hoods began to defend the city. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When one is sleeping, the life air remains active in different dreams. The five hoods of the snake indicate that the life air is surrounded by five kinds of air, known as prana, apana, yana, udana, and samana. When the body is inactive, the prana, or the life air, is active. Up to the age of 50, one can actually work for sense gratification. But after the 50th year, one's energy decreases, although one can, with great strain, work for two or three more years, perhaps up to the 55th year. Thus, the 55th year is generally taken by government regulations as the final year for retirement. Jai. The energy which is fatigued after 50 years is figuratively described herein as a serpent with five hoods. So, Te chanda veganu chara puranjana parangyata haritum are bire tatra pratya she dot prajagaraha. So, Om Ganat Timadanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshoda Miditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So, definitely what Prabhupada is saying is something that at least I've experienced, that after 50, the enjoyment one gets from the senses and the strength of the senses and the bodily energy becomes diminished. And it's good, because that means there's less tendency for sense gratification. That's not a bad thing, because it means it's a message from the time factor that it's time to prepare for death by engaging more in spiritual activities. However, in modern society, they attempt to keep enjoying the senses to the utmost degree up until the time of death, and they have employed some artificial means in order to do that. Of course, the most popular medicine in the world is, I can mention the name, Viagra, and there's another one, Cialis or something like that. I don't even know how to pronounce it. But so I get, in my emails, practically every day I get advertisements for these things. Not that I'm buying them. I would have no need for them. But, you know, you get these advertisements, buy from Canada, buy from India, you know, you get cheaper Viagra, cheaper Cialis. And so people are so determined that even though it is harmful for the health, they keep buying these medicines on the black market. And even there are some instances, we've mentioned this before, and old people's communities, they have like Viagra parties. you know, all the old, and it's illegal too, because technically speaking, you're supposed to get a prescription for this, because if you take these medicines when you're older, it can precipitate a heart attack. Just like there was that example of that one priest that Prabhupada was preaching to. And anyway, Prabhupada was preaching to him about you should give up eating meat and all these other things. And the priest had a heart attack when he was having some sort of relationship with a prostitute. And the prostitute dragged him outside of her door, and he was found outside the door of the prostitute's apartment. Anyway, so it's actually not helpful for someone to engage in sense gratification of that sort after they're 50, whether they're utilizing this medicine or not utilizing the medicine. It can cause extreme problems with the body. And Prabhupada also said that when one engages in illicit life, when they're young, when they get older, they'll wish they were dead, because it depletes the ojas, or the energy within the body. You know, these what's described here, the five hoods of the serpent, which are the five life affairs, become depleted when one's young. If one doesn't engage in sense gratification, then one remains very much alert. And we have examples of that in our Vaishnava heritage. People like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, even though the body was falling apart, and he describes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that he says, even though I'm, you know, blind, you know, half blind, and I'm lame, and, you know, basically all the whole body is falling apart, still he was composing the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is the most erudite exposition on the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was able to compile the information given to him by Sarup Damodar Goswami and the other Vaishnavas, you know, passing down through Raghunath Das Goswami. And he was able to compile this information in the most wonderful treatise, the Chaitanya Charitamrita's poetry. And he was doing that when he was like 70 or 80 years old. And also we see with his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was able to be extremely sharp, sharper than his Western disciples, in fact. I mean, Prabhupada had Western disciples who were 20 years old, and he could walk faster than them. He could talk faster. He could think faster. Everything. It's amazing, isn't it? So it's interesting that the mind doesn't have to go down when one gets older. The physical body, yes. It goes down. You should still do a little exercise, keep it going, but obviously you're not supposed to do extreme exercises. They find people, we were talking about this the other day with Daryl, that they have people who run the marathon when they're older, and every marathon they end up with a few people dying during different marathons, or the Boston Marathon, the New York Marathon, either through dehydration or because they're old and they shouldn't be attempting to do such a thing. So the physical body goes down, but if we don't engage in sense gratification, then the mind can remain sharp if we keep using our mind. Now, using our mind means to use it in Krishna consciousness, first of all, and secondly, not to engage the mind in simply being absorbed in even thoughts of sense gratification. Or even, let's say, modern technology, we've experienced that when one utilizes the technology, especially computers, or what to speak of, video games, which are thoughts of sense gratification anyway, then the mind becomes very dull. I've seen that even with young people, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old, what to speak of someone my age or someone older, when they actually play these video games, their mind becomes dull and they become immersed in the mode of ignorance. So even at a young age, you can ruin your mind. You know, just like, huh? It's completely useless. the mind becomes like jello instead of something that's useful. So, of course, in the Vedic system, there are ways to rejuvenate your body and engage in sense gratification. I mean, we're not advocating it, but there's this story of Chaivana Muni. I don't know if you've heard this story. Chaivana Muni, he became very attracted to a young girl, Sukanya. That means the happy young girl. Like Suk means happiness. Kanya means like a young virgin girl, you know, Sukanya. Or Su also can mean good, like that Subhadra, auspicious. So the auspicious are happy, happy young sweet girl. So anyway, he became attracted to her while she was visiting his ashram. The story is that he was living in a meditating inside a little hole, like a wormhole in the ground. He had made himself very small, and he was looking at her through that wormhole. You know, his eye was there, and she poked his eye out, or at least caused some pain to him. And that the result of that was that her father and her father's soldiers, her father's name was Saryati. Her father and her father's soldiers actually either became constipated or had some digestive problem. What's that noise? A storm. So, and then her father had to give her to this old guy, a Chaivana Muni. And so she was married. He was old, like 90 years old, and she was like 15. You know, what a combination. I mean, you see this sometimes nowadays, too, that a 20-year-old lady will marry an older man. For a variety of purposes, one is that he's going to kick the bucket soon and she's going to get the money. Another reason is he may have some opulences. But this is really not so nice, because an old man should be thinking of spiritual life rather than young girls. And I'm going to explain in a few minutes how we can give up the tendency to think about these things. But anyway, that's the end of the class. So anyway, so with Chaivana Muni, he was attached to her, so he got married to her, you know, 15-year-old girl, 16-year-old girl, 80-something-year-old man. And, of course, she was very dharmic, and she served him in spite of his not only looking horrendous, but he had a bad temper. You know, when you get older, sometimes your temper gets bad. If you're engaged in sense gratification or whatever. Of course, he wasn't. He was a yogi. But so anyway, so he had a bad temper, short temper, let's say. He didn't abuse her. It's not the microphone. There's some loose connection there. Anyway, he didn't abuse her, but he was just like a little crabby, as they say. And she remained faithful. Eventually, the story goes, the Ashwini Kumaras came to him, and he made a deal with them. The Ashwini Kumaras are the physicians of the heavenly planets. And he made a deal with them that I will allow you to drink the soma juice if you give me youth. So they went into this lake that they had created through their powers of being good physicians, this lake of eternal life, or as they say in America, the fountain of youth, which Ponce de Leon was looking for. And so they went into this lake, and they all came out youthful. He had a youthful body, and she couldn't even recognize who it was, which one was her husband. She asked the Ashwini Kumaras, please tell me which one is the husband, and they told. And so she was very happy that she had a young husband then. Her father came along and saw her with this young man. And her father said, you unchaste daughter, you have actually given up your rightful husband, your legal husband, and just taken up with this young, useless young man. And so she very proudly said to her father, Dad, don't worry. This is the old guy. You know, he just took a young body. So that's an instance in the Vedic culture where someone takes a young body to enjoy. There's other examples too. Yayati, King Yayati, he was cursed to become old prematurely because he had upset his wife, and his wife was the daughter of Shukracharya, Devayani. And Shukracharya cursed him to become old. And then later on, Devayani said, what am I going to do with an old husband? You know, how can I enjoy with an old husband? And then her father thought, yeah, I got to give him back his youth. Let me give him a method for getting back his youth. And that method is to exchange his youth, his old age, sorry, with the youth of one of his sons. So he went to all of his sons, and basically only this one son, Puru, agreed. And he was a good son. He exchanged his youth for his father's old age, and his father enjoyed for some time, and then after some time he realized that material enjoyment is not very useful. Anyway, so these are some instances of the actual way to become young in a physical body if you want to. I'm not suggesting it, nor are any of you expert enough to do these things or have the mercy of Krishna to be able to do these things. But certainly don't undertake the Western methodologies of taking pills, or, as Prabhupada talked before, many years ago, they used to take monkeys out of Vrindavan and take their glands and transplant them in human beings. Yeah, they actually used to go to Vrindavan and take these rhesus monkeys, which are extremely lusty, very, very lusty monkeys, and they used to take their some glands, the genitals or something like that, and put them in human beings. And Prabhupada said, they're taking the sex glands out of one monkey and putting them into another monkey. Because Prabhupada said, you know, obviously, people were acting like monkeys, so they were actually utilizing monkey glands. So anyway, we are not interested in any of those things. We're not interested in prolonging the youth and the enjoying spirit of this body longer. We are actually interested in taking up spiritual life. So in order to do that, here's the point, the practical point of class. Probably that loose connection again or something. So the practical point is, while we still have the full ability to enjoy the senses, we should... So many sound effects in class. So while we still have the ability to enjoy these senses, we should be very careful not to cultivate... What's that noise? We should be very careful not to cultivate the enjoying mentality. What do I mean by that? I mean, it's just... I was thinking about this yesterday in regard to Thanksgiving. So... In Krishna consciousness, we have four regulative principles, right? Everybody know them? No, you don't. Anyway, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling, and no meat eating, no meat, fish, or eggs. Okay, got it. The four regulative principles that you promise to follow. So the idea is not only that we follow these four regulative principles, you know, externally, obviously, but we should somehow or other train our mind not to be attracted to them anymore, which is very, very important. In other words, we don't want to be breaking the regulative principles in our mind by taking up imitation ways externally of breaking the regulative principles. Now, that may appear like something you don't understand. Oh, let me give you an example. Let's say we're very much addicted to smoking. Okay. So maybe we should make Maha Mantra in the kitchen should make an asparagus in the shape of a cigarette so we can keep it in our mouths, you know, like that. Or like incense or something like that. Or even more grossly, let's say we're very much addicted to illicit sex. All right. So maybe we should just get the form of a woman and keep that in our houses. And, you know, instead of having a list of sex, just kiss it every day or embrace it or something like that. Or keep pictures of different attractive ladies or get one of these calendars, you know. So the reason I'm talking about this in regard to Thanksgiving is that I was thinking about this as in terms of devotees sometimes eating meat, or not eating meat, but eating vegetarian food that is shaped like meat. It actually keeps awake the desire to enjoy something that is illicit. I mean, it's one thing to, let's say, we're trying to bring people to vegetarianism. Okay, you know, here's a veggie burger. Fine. You know, a veggie burger. You know, you see that vegetables have similar tastes. You can get a similar taste from vegetables. You don't have to give up that taste. All right. But for a devotee to be thinking about these things, it really keeps the senses, let's say, agitated, or keeps the mind agitated. I mean, and if you think about it, let's say if someone was a Muslim. Okay, let's say someone's a Muslim and they don't eat pigs. Do Muslims go around making artificial pigs from turkey meat or something like that? I don't think they would do such a thing. So why should we be doing artificial, illicit life? You know, it's, and in our minds, we're thinking it's like that, we're feeling it's like that, and externally, we're not doing it. You know, it's just like drinking water underwater while fasting on a fast day. You understand what I mean? So the point is to be able to renounce this world when one's 50. This is what we're talking about. What does it mean, renounce the world? It doesn't mean, like, just go off to the woods. But it means to give up the desire for enjoying the senses, at least in an illicit way, then one has to be cultivating this throughout one's life. Like that. It's not that all of a sudden at 50, you just say, well, bye-bye senses, or, you know, bye-bye sense enjoyment, or bye-bye illicit life. As they say, cold turkey. Cold turkey is, you know, when one's addicted to drugs and they give it up like that, and they go through withdrawal somehow or other. So anyway, so I was just thinking about that devotees, at least devotees who have been in the movement a few years, shouldn't be imitating illicit life. You didn't hear the first part. Perfect. Shouldn't be imitating illicit life like meat eating, using things that are not illicit, because it just keeps the mind alert or attached to these things. I think it's a very important point to understand. I mean, because that means we're just doing things externally and ritualistically if we, you know, keep the spirit of enjoyment. You know, why do we give up? Like, why do we give up these things? I mean, why do we give up intoxication? Why do we give up meeting? Why do we give up illicit sex? Why do we give up gambling? I mean, some devotees, like, they keep gambling by, you know, playing the stock market in different ways. You understand? Not that playing the stock market is necessarily gambling. It could be if you're investing and you have some intelligence about, you know, what company is going up or what company is going down, that's not gambling. But there's a way of playing the stock market that is gambling. So people do things, they just like push the envelope, so to speak, or just try to be, you know, and enjoy things illicitly or in the mind without enjoying things externally. That's not following the regulated principles. We should understand that. Following the regulated principles, I mean, we have to be cultivating Krishna consciousness, cultivating the mode of goodness. That's in the mind. Devotional service is executed in the subtle body. The gross body, yes, we should execute devotionals over the gross body, but not simply with the gross body. That's niyamagraha. Or doing devotional service, you know, just externally, with ritualistically. So we have to understand why we're doing certain things and to cultivate the mode of goodness in our taste, at least the mode of goodness in our taste, the mode of goodness in our activities. This is extremely important in order to advance. And that's why we have the four regular principles, Not only because of the karmic thing. Yeah, I understand. That's an external thing. You know, you get bad karma by eating meat. But you also pollute your consciousness by doing or having tastes in the mode of ignorance. Or remembering things in the mode of ignorance. I mean, let's say, you know, let's say someone doesn't have illicit sex life, but they remember illicit sex life. Actually, it's described. Srila Prabhupada describes that illicit sex life is not only the act, but the planning. You understand? The planning, the thinking, any of these things connected is also illicit. Not in the same sense that there's a karmic reaction for it, obviously. You know, there's two things. One is consciousness and the other one is karma. We can do things that don't, we can avoid things that externally that have a karmic reaction and not get a karmic reaction for it, but we can actually be polluting our consciousness nonetheless. So we're interested not only in avoiding bad karma, but in not polluting the consciousness. So anyway, so these are some of the points. So if we actually want to give up sense gratification, then we have to avoid it both subtly and grossly. And of course, ultimately, we should be attempting to satisfy the senses of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Important point. So any questions or comments about these things? So anyway, so it was yesterday it sort of brought up that point in my mind. You know, why should we be imitating something? I mean, and if you think about it, I mean, not to belabor the point, it's just like so horrendous, like an imitation turkey. I mean, what is a turkey? Is an animal. I mean, if you think an imitation, you know, killing, imitation eating flesh. I mean, a turkey is a feeling, thinking, whatever, entity. We should not engage in imitation illicit life. Because it... Anyway, I mean, I can give many reasons for it, or many examples, like... It would be like if cannibals, let's say in Fiji, you know, Fiji was the cannibal islands, and they gave up eating meat. Of course, the first... Before they gave up eating meat, they ate the first priest who came over to the island to preach. They even ate the shoes because they didn't have experience with shoes before, so they cooked the whole body in a pot, and they thought this part of the body is very hard, so we have to cook it more. So let's say, all right, say let's say these natives gave up eating human beings. So instead, so they remember the good old times, they would make human beings out of vegetables and eat them. Can you imagine that? You know, let's say you know, one day here in Nugaloka will make a human body out of vegetables. You know, quinoa and what else? And then we'll eat a leg, we'll eat an arm. I mean, that would be ridiculous, but it's the same thing. It's the same thing as making a turkey out of vegetables. It just reminds us of sinful activities. Because the subtle mind has to be purified. It's not just give up karma. I know I'm belaboring the point. So any other questions or comments? Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You're desensitized to that activity and a specific taste and activity. I mean, what are you doing? You're imitating something that is so grossly sinful. That's what you're doing. You're imitating something that is extremely grossly sinful. I mean, even worse than sex life. I mean, if you've got to imitate something, imitate sex life. Because you know, you're imitating the killing of another living entity and the eating of another living... Think about it. So we don't think about what we're doing. You know, we do things without thinking, you know, about what effect we'll have on the consciousness, what it's imitating of... I mean, certainly we don't imitate sex life. We don't imitate Before you came in, we talked about imitating, taking intoxication. You know, we had asparagus in the shape of a cigarette, you know. I mean, that would be ridiculous. And because I like to smoke before I joined the movement. I didn't, but I'm just saying, rhetorically, if someone liked to smoke, the devotees going around like that, the asparagus. Or with incense. The incense. Or I tell you, when we were young, we had chocolate cigarettes. I don't know if anyone remembers that. They don't do that anymore because it's probably illegal. But, you know, that was one of the first things, you know, chocolate cigarettes. I still remember the taste of them. They were delicious. Yeah. I loved them. Because they were chocolate. And just peel it off and, it's delicious. It's chocolate. So it addicts you to a certain sinful activity, even though you're not doing the sinful activity. Perfect, you had a question? We have to be kind, set good examples ourselves, be tolerant, be patient with them. And be happy in Krishna consciousness, not agitated, not angry, not preachy. I mean, there's also things not to do. Basic thing is just be kind and loving. And if they can see a good example of our own relationships, our own Krishna consciousness, and that we're happy and not negative, not petunias, or prunes. You know, then people will be attracted. I mean, I remember in Krishna consciousness, we should show people a good time in Krishna consciousness. I mean, that's really it. And, you know, there is plenty of good sense enjoyment in Krishna consciousness. Nice tasting prasadam. I remember I joined the movement. There was nothing that was an imitation sense gratification. I mean, immediately there was pakoras and halva and sweet rice and all that other stuff. And Prabhupada had us make some things that had a similar to a meat taste. I mean, there's certain things like, what is that called again? Kapta balls and jackfruit and everything like that. But Prabhupada never had us make imitation meat. You know, it was immediately, you know, a different standard of food, a different culture of food. And that's how I was trained up in Krishna consciousness. Immediately a different culture, and I liked it, and I accepted it. And it was easier to give up the other thing. Of course, I was a vegetarian before I joined the movement. I mean, basically, I was just eating salad and yogurt before I joined the movement. It was pretty austere because I didn't know how to cook so well. I mean, I thought to be a vegetarian means just salad and yogurt and sprouts. It was a radical shift from what it was before, rather than just like imitating what I was doing before, or imitating what people were doing in the material world, and it was more effective. I felt it was much more effective as far as bringing me to Krishna consciousness. You know, I didn't have any like imitation illicit sex or imitation intoxication. Of course, we did eat a lot of food, and that was like intoxication, but. You know, you ate so much that it hurt afterwards in the Sunday feast. Remember that. But that's different. So we don't want... The main thing is we want to keep training our mind in the proper thing and not be addicted to what we were doing before. Okay. Unpopular. So all glories to Srila Prabhupada.